And our special guest tonight, William Henry, will be back. We'll talk more about this incredible symbolism and then also talk about 2012 right here on Coast to Coast AM. William, why were some of these secrets in the Capitol intentionally encoded? Why didn't they just make it obvious for us?
Well, personally, I think there's a benevolent aspect to this. Some people are very cynical when they look at Washington, D.C., the layout of D.C., any of the buildings. They think there's some dark, sinister forces at work, Masonic forces, a conspiracy to keep this knowledge away from people. But the fact of the matter is, George, that it's just not for everybody until they take freedom's the journey towards freedom's gate. It's something that is not given. It's something that's earned. And behind all of this is sort of a progression. One of my favorite quotes is from an early 20th century symbolist, Harold Bailey, who said that mysticism has universally taught that every man has within him the germs or seeds of divinity, and that by self-conquest, these sparks of heaven may be fanned into a flame, the flame into a fire, the fire into a star, and the star into a sun. And so until you take the first step yourself to conquer your own fears, your lower nature, and to start fanning the flame, it's just not there for you. But once you take that path and the flame turns into a fire, now your life is just about consumed by this, and you begin to seek and you begin to recognize that there are beings who have transformed themselves into a star, and they have left for us the pathway. It's sort of like E.T. with the Reese's Pieces, and that's sort of what these pieces are around the world, the Vatican, the United States Capitol, the Great Pyramids are all buildings or temples that are designed for us to access this higher consciousness if we choose to do so ourselves.
But how do we tap into that, you know, if we choose to do this? How do we do it?
Well, what you do is you learn the language of symbolism. You learn the language of metaphor. You have to be able to look at the painting. Now, on the Coast to Coast side, I sent five keys that show four different levels of geometry that are encoded or embedded within that painting. And so, for example, for some reason, George, since 1865, nobody has commented that the five gods surrounding George Washington and the apotheosis, the five pagan gods the Vatican had spent 1,600 years trying to get rid of, are also the five gods that represent the five elements of earth, air, fire, water, and metal, or space-time. And suddenly we come along and recognize that and put the geometry on top of it, the pentacle, which is the symbol of the transformed man, and now the teaching begins to be revealed. And so the key is to be able to understand the language of symbolism, the language of mythology, and the language of geometry. Those are the three of the key principles or disciplines that one must school themselves in if they're going to walk this path.
These pictures, are these the ones you shot when you were on your back?
Yes, they are.
Very good.
Yes, they are. And what happened is that Dr. Gray and I, Mark Gray is a symbolist from Philadelphia as well as a chiropractor, started looking into this geometry. It was actually Mark who made the connection with the pentacle. And then we put the hexagram on top of it. Excuse me. And then ultimately we found the highest level of revelation in the apotheosis when we put Metatron's cube on top of it and noticed that matched perfectly. Metatron's cube is one of the most important symbols in geometry. It was discovered by a 13th century Italian mathematician named Fibonacci. And it was literally considered to be, and still is considered to be, a gateway to higher consciousness. And just simply by meditating on, focusing on Metatron's cube, it is thought that it helps to tune our consciousness into other realms. It takes us out of this three-dimensional reality, the hard physical reality, into the realm of the field, into the noetic realm, where all things are possible, into the divine realm. And what do you know? When you superimpose Metatron's cube over the apotheosis, it fits perfectly. And we, in fact, believe that that may ultimately have been the guiding metaphor or image that Brumidi used when he created this incredible, what we call, icon of transformation.
With Dan Brown's work, even though it's a novel, did he miss anything significant?
He missed all of this that I just described.
Everything.
Yeah, his understanding, well, he only had 600 pages. His understanding of it stopped where I was at when I gave my presentation last November. I was kind of surprised by that, because a man of his intuition and intelligence, I thought that, you know, maybe he'd go further, but no, he missed all of this. And that's why we would like to have an opportunity to share our findings, because we think he would deeply appreciate them.
Are you going to talk a little bit about this with Whitley Strieber at the Joshua Tree event?
Yes, I am, and thank you for bringing that up. That's going to be a fantastic event. I'll be doing my Stargate Christianity presentation, which is actually titled "You Are a Stargate." That is the bottom line in all this research. And I should also mention that I'm also doing a conference called the Lost Symbol Conference with Simon Cox, who is one of the all-time great Dan Brown commentators, actually one of the all-time great researchers. He did work with Graham Hancock and Robert Bevall before he put his name on the title, sold 2.5 million copies of Da Vinci Code Decoded. He's working with my webmaster, Mark Foster, to produce a book called The Lost Symbols A to Z, which comes out in October, which is going to be, I know, just a fantastic guide for readers of the Lost Symbols. Simon and Mark are good friends, and I look forward to seeing them as well. So I've got some excellent events coming up here in the next month or so.
You know Jordan Maxwell, expert in symbolism.
I just saw Jordan last weekend. Yeah, he's a good buddy.
He's afraid of something, though, William. He is deathly afraid that, you know, he's either being followed or watched. Do you have this fear at all?
Not one bit. No, I guess my archetype is more the fool. I'm kind of the guy just kind of cruising along, feeling innocent and fearless, and not looking over my shoulder very much. I just try to adopt that attitude and keep myself in as much synchronicity as possible. Tune my heart, my mind to what I do want rather than what I don't want. That's the secret, after all. And that kind of serves me well.
How close does the Capitol Dome mirror also some of the recreation of Solomon's Temple by builders?
This is one of the key elements in Freedom's Gate. And this is something, again, that Dr. Gray dug up. It's very important. In the Sistine Chapel of the Vatican, which is, of course, the chapel that the cardinals and other representatives gather in when they're going to elect a new pope. They lock themselves in that room, and they don't come out until they've elected the new pope. Well, the most favorable place that you can sleep in that room is underneath a painting called Christ Giving the Keys to St. Peter. And this is a painting by an Italian painter named Perugino. It portrays in the foreground Jesus giving the keys to the kingdom to St. Peter. In the background is Solomon's Temple. Well, in this example of Solomon's Temple, it has an octagonal base and a domed roof. Now, there's no biblical basis for this. The Bible does not say that Solomon's Temple 2, which existed at the time of Jesus and Mary Magdalene and had a 180-foot tall tower in front of it, it says nothing about a dome. But yet, here it is in the most important place, conceivably, in the Vatican. Another example of this is Raphael's painting of the marriage of Joseph and Mary. Again, Joseph and Mary are in the foreground. In the background is Solomon's Temple. It now has a polygonal base, but the same domed roof. Somebody in the Vatican is allowing this representation. And all of these paintings, the two paintings I just mentioned, were commissioned by the Vatican. Raphael and Perugino were both Vatican painters.
Right.
They're saying it's okay to represent Solomon's Temple with a dome on it. So two important things here. The United States Capitol, as it existed just before the War of 1812, is a dead ringer for Solomon's Temple in Perugino's keys. Second thing is the distance from the floor of the Vatican, the floor of the rotunda, to the apotheosis on the ceiling of the United States Capitol is 180 feet. This is very important to us because when they laid the cornerstone of the United States Capitol, the masons who supervised this, and you have George Washington in full Masonic regalia laying the cornerstone with the corn, mm-hmm. oil, and wine there, and then you have one of the masters of the Freemasonic Lodge saying that they have every hope that the grand work we have done today will be handed down to a late posterity as the like work of that ever memorable temple to our order erected by our grand master Solomon. Then a couple years later, when President Adams is opening the second session of Congress, he refers to this temple as the Solemn Temple. And so when you put their words together, it sounds like they're talking about the U.S. Capitol as the Solomon's Temple.
Good job. Good job indeed. How do you get the book, Freedom's Gate?
Freedom's Gate is available from my website, which is williamhenry.net. I've got it available in two forms, a beautiful coffee table version, full color, and also an e-book version that's on a CD with all full color illustrations, the complete book in PDF format.
Super. We're going to talk about the Revelation 2012 as well as Stargate 2012. I can't believe, William, how close this time period is now. I mean, it used to seem so far away, but not anymore.
I know. I remember we used to talk about this back in 03 or 04,
yeah.
And here we are in 09, and it's right here. So buckle up, because it's here. And Mark Gray is working on a follow-up to Freedom's Gate, some information we couldn't put in, which you would love to talk with him about, because it turns out, guess what? There's a star clock in the apotheosis, and it points to a particular date.
December 21st, 2012?
Yes. In fact, the Aztec calendar stone, which was the model for the Mayan calendar, is also in the rotunda of the United States Capitol. Brumidi painted it. So he knew about the Aztec calendar. He knew about this star clock. He knew about the precession of the equinoxes and this 26,000-year cosmic cycle that comes to a close in 2012. And it's all referenced in the paintings in the rotunda of the United States Capitol.
What is your take on what could happen in 2012?
Well, you know, that's a really broad but very good question. Probably nothing is the answer, because we're already experiencing what is going to be transpiring then, except we're going to see an acceleration. I think that we're going to have evidence of teleportation. Our ability to create teleportation devices will be a revolutionary technology that will emerge and be known publicly without question by that time. But personally, I think that 2012 is more of a spiritual experience for each individual. And depending upon where they're at on that progression from just getting on to fanning the flame, to entering into the fire and turning that fire into a star, that's going to depend what your 2012 experience is. Because remember, it really is all about an acceleration of frequency. And this is where the cross-reference comes in with the Christian end-time philosophy, because they talk about a second coming of a Christ or Messiah. And when you look to esoteric Christianity, they talk about that inscription above the cross. It said INRI, I-N-R-I, thought to mean Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews. But to the esoteric Christians, it means by fire, frequency, or vibration, humankind is made holy or whole. And so what this end time is about from that perspective, which is what a lot of people talk about in terms of the 2012 perspective, is that it's about an acceleration of this frequency or vibration, and that we have to be able to vibe with it, to put it in a, you know, a street kind of language way. Otherwise, we're going to have some problems.
Are you a proponent of mind experiments of consciousness to try to change events and outcomes, William?
Yeah, I think we see evidence of that all the time. I was watching the Titans lose to I'm sorry, I just forgot who they were playing the other day, and I'm just thinking, well, wait a minute. You know, there should be a home field advantage here, but it didn't work. They were playing the Texans, excuse me. And it just seems like, yes, that there is without question this ability of a collective group of a mind consciousness to be able to influence outcomes. And more, I think we're starting to see evidence of that. And again, that is the prime message of noetics. That is the prime message that Dan Brown worked into the middle areas of his Lost Symbol book. And I believe that that's what is going to be a very important part of this whole 2012 experience, that we can literally have a collective awakening here, because we can have a collective imagining of what it is we want to experience.
Last year, Atlanta was suffering severe water shortages.
Mm-hmm.
Their main lake where they got their water was sinking lower and lower and lower. And we did a little mind experiment, and we got a little rain, and it rained again. And sure enough, if not 2 days ago, did the Southeast, specifically Georgia and Atlanta,
right,
have more rain than they needed. I mean, right, to the point, though, William, that, you know, eight people have died in flooding down there.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, I'm saying to myself, okay, I'm now convinced that this works, but I'm also convinced that it has incredible repercussions. Now, this one took a while. It took 8-9 months for it to kick in. One could say, oh, come on, it was bound to rain eventually. This was more rain than you can imagine. That lake has got to be filled right back up again.
Mm-hmm.
Why does it have the repercussions? Why can't it just be the simple, let's let it rain and it's comfortable? Why does it have to be a deluge? Because so many people are doing it, or what?
Well, I just try to keep things simple. Don't mess with Mother Nature.
Yeah, well, that's what happens.
And that's what happens. But again, the same mindset, though, applies to what we were talking about earlier about the dome. Let's just imagine that Americans, many of them, commit themselves to a couple of times a day turning to the Capitol dome and putting positive intentions into it. I mean, a couple of months ago, Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois said the banks own the dome. And I wasn't very happy with that. It sparked me to think, well, what can we do about that? You know, what would Jesus have done if he walks into the temple and sees the money changers?
He kicks them.
He throws them out.
Yep.
That's right. We don't have a Jesus figure around right now to go in there and do the cleanup job that needs to be done. So that means we have to do it as citizens. And if we can't go there physically, we can go there mentally. We can put that intention on it, and we can, because that dome is literally a bell, it is literally, George, a cast iron bell that can be rung. And so my thought is that if we start to pour collective energy into that bell, into that dome, and get it ringing, and if we can raise the vibration of that place, then they who don't have the best intentions of the American people in mind in that sacred space hopefully will be shown the door. They're going to have to leave because they won't be able to stand the heat.
Well, that's true. Besides what is encoded at the Capitol, is there anything physically hidden away there?
Well,
in your opinion?
Absolutely. Are you kidding me? There are so many rooms that when you're walking around the Capitol, it says members only. This is a members only club. And the members, of course, are the congressmen and senators. And so it has more closed doors and secret passages than any building except the Great Pyramid that I've been in. And so literally the only way that I could conceivably learn more about the Capitol than I already know is to get elected. And I'm not throwing my hat in the ring.
You're not running.
Right, I'm not running this year.
You're having too much. Oh, is that a qualification? Did you say not this year?
Well, I want to know what's really going on in that building, George, and the only way that I can see to do that is to get elected or to befriend a member who might be able to take me around. And so far, I'm not really having too much success in that regard, but maybe that'll change. So,
would you run for what, Congress?
Well, that would be one of the only two qualifications that would give me membership into that building, to either become a congressman or a senator.
That would be fascinating. Would you still do Coast to Coast with us?
I would do Coast to Coast anytime, George.
You're anytime. One of a kind, William. Hey, let's come back. We're going to talk more with you about the symbolism and about the 2012 and something I haven't done in a long time. Let's open up Fast Blasts as well for questions with William Henry. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Rosemary Ellen Guiley will be our StreamLink chatter on Wednesday night, so take advantage of that, 8 p.m. Pacific time, with the dream lady, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and also great paranormal investigator. When we come back, we'll continue chatting with William Henry, investigative mythologist, and also take a few fast blast questions before next hour we'll take full questions on the phone with William Henry. William, what's the theme of Revelation 2012, The Eye of the Needle?
Well, I took a moment, got out my Bible, opened it up to the book of Revelation, chapter 20, verse 12.
Interesting.
And you know what it says?
What?
That's Judgment Day.
Interesting.
I saw the dead, great and small, standing before the throne, and books were opened. Another book was opened, which is the book of life. The dead were judged according to what they had done as recorded in the books. Now, a lot came spilling out of that for me. First of all, when we're talking about the throne, this is something that is addressed in the apotheosis, because the throne of God is considered to be a place of pure light and pure love. And humans in our fleshly form are not capable of staying in that frequency or vibration without becoming pure. And so when they talk about the throne, I'm thinking that's, you know, this is a place of pure light and pure love. And in my imagination, I mean, you can think of that throne as a center point in this enormous universe that we dwell in, that has at least 350 billion known galaxies similar to our own. But in my imagination, I've just kind of reduced it down to asking the question, well, what if we think of the throne as the center of our Milky Way galaxy? And there's justification for that, because numerous shamanic traditions teach us this is the place our souls come from. And so here we are in 2012, some believe, aligning in a special way with the center of the galaxy. So we are kind of standing before the throne right now. And books are opening. Knowledge is doubling, what, about every 6 months right now, George?
Oh, dramatic, yeah.
Yeah. Book after book is opening, including the Book of Life, or the Human Genetic Code. And so now this is the time when the dead are judged according to what they have done as recorded in these books. And my research reveals that the whole Christian concept of Judgment Day is actually Egyptian in origin. It comes from the weighing of the heart ceremony in the Egyptian Book of the Dead, when the initiate's heart is weighed against the feather of Mat, or divine truth, cosmic order. If the heart weighs less than the feather, then that soul continues on its spiral of evolution into the next higher level. If it weighs more than the feather, then the soul has to go back through the whole process again in a period of reincarnation. And so I think that's what 2012 is about. It's about emptying the heart of any of that gook that might be in there, lightening our load in preparation for a time when we're going to have to live very lighthearted. That means we're going to have a sense of humor. We're also going to have to be living above the lower three chakras of greed and fear and materialism, and focusing more on heartfelt issues and more of a giving and nurturing kind of a civilization. Now, there's one other layer of this that's very important, and that is, and that also relates to the apotheosis, and that is that Christians believe that in these end times, Judgment Day,
yes,
the entire human body of Christ will be changed to light to match the body of Christ in his kingdom. George Washington is portrayed as a light being, as a resurrected being in the apotheosis. And so he, in effect, becomes a sort of model for us of what is to happen at this time. And lo and behold, and I hope you might get an opportunity to interview Dr. Gray about this, because the whole star clock business in the rotunda in the apotheosis is fascinating. And it points to the United States Capitol as kind of ground zero for what is going to transpire in 2012.
Let's take some fast blast questions. Next hour, we'll take actual phone call questions for you, William. Olivia in Vancouver, Washington wants to know, do you know if the founding fathers put anything in place to help Americans in the future from government tyranny and to protect our freedom? What do you think?
It's called the United States Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and as I mentioned, the United States Capitol Temple is actually the physical correspondent to the Constitution. So my answer is that, yes, they certainly did. They envisioned this place that Americans could always turn to, and encoded within this place, the United States Capitol, is all the information that we need to not only overcome those that would seek to impose tyranny and slavery on us, whether it's economic or physical, but also to go beyond that and to actually achieve true freedom, which means enlightenment.
Another writes, because you've been to Egypt, William, what can you tell us about underground rooms, perhaps underneath the Sphinx, for example? Anything there?
No, I haven't actually experienced them. I've had some very intuitive people join me in between the paws of the Sphinx that are sure that they're there. All I know is that when I'm in between the paws of the Sphinx, that suddenly my hands just become hot, like there's some really wild fire running through them. And that's enough for me to know that there's something very special about that place.
Bell from Santa Monica, California. Do you know if the city of Los Angeles has symbolic secrets and temples as well?
It most certainly does, and I'm not hoping to come off as cryptic here, but in the near future, I will have a full report.
Okay, very good. Thomas writes from Pace, Florida. I just tuned in. I may have missed some of this. What do you know about a statue atop the rotunda? Is it a goddess? Do you know anything about that, William?
Yes, actually, her name is Freedom.
Freedom.
It's a 19 and a half tall statue that was placed there in 1863, and it is a magnificent statue, and this is why we called our book Freedom's Gate, because she stands atop the dome, this temple of celestial liberty. It, in fact, is her gateway, we believe. And if we can learn to become cloaked in the principles of freedom as she is, then we too will be free beings. And I wanted to mention something that's very important to Mark and I as we started to investigate the Capitol and get to know some of the folks there. We were very fortunate early on in one of our trips there to befriend one of the ultimate Capitol guides, Burt Caswell. He's been there 20 years. And I'll never forget that when we were standing in the rotunda, he just stopped and he looked at us and he says, "Men, there's only one reason why you two are standing in here in the rotunda." And he said, "It's because millions of people, men and women, gave their blood so that you could be here. They sacrificed their lives, and I don't want you to ever forget that." And I never did. And that's why on the cover of our book, the title is written in red. It's symbolic of the blood of all who gave their lives so that Freedom's Gate would remain open.
I would hope that he would have that very important speech before other members of Congress and tell them the same thing he told you, William.
Burt is an amazing man. He is a poet. In fact, in the front of the book, in the dedication, we quote him, his poem, "A Dome," which has been read into the Congressional Record. "A dome so very high, rising upwards towards the heavens while reaching the skies, as she stands alone as democracy's most magnificent of all homes, as her O-hallowed shrine our world surely eyes." That's just a part of "A Dome" by Albert Carey Caswell, U.S. Capitol Guide.
In San Diego, Aston writes, "The apotheosis of George Washington, is it prophetic?"
The apotheosis of George Washington, we believe, is the ultimate American prophecy. And again, what it says is the word apotheosis is Greek. It means to deify. It means to glorify. It means to raise from a man to a man God. What it is saying is George Washington is no longer a man. He is a man God, in the model of Jesus, in the model of the Tibetan lamas who have achieved the great perfection. And this is the meaning of Washington on the rainbow. It has one and only one meaning, and that is it.
Do you think the Founding Fathers were particularly religious, or did they believe in some other style, perhaps Egyptian symbolism? This is from Zohab in Brooklyn.
Well, they most certainly were investigators of many traditions, the Hermetic tradition, the Egyptian tradition, the esoteric Christian tradition. They were considered deists. Their platform was what was known as the Enlightenment, which was a period during which people began to believe that, based on the ideas of John Locke and Jean-Jacques Rousseau, Sir Francis Bacon, Galileo, Copernicus, and others, that science could solve all of the world's problems, and that ultimately the unity of science and religion was the key to the ultimate enlightenment of humankind. And that message is also reflected in the apotheosis by all of the inventions that surround George Washington. This was a period when they first laid the Atlantic cable. You had these wonderful harvesters that called McCormick reapers that had just been invented. Benjamin Franklin is in the apotheosis. He's sitting there with his inventions. And so the message here that Brumidia is encoding is that science and technology will ultimately lead to the enlightenment of the human species. And that is something that a lot of people subscribe to today, but we also, of course, must be very careful with this because we literally are playing with fire.
What's your take on the Washington Monument? Comes Rocky from Fayetteville, North Carolina. Anything there? Any aspects of masonry?
Well, yeah. You know, Mark is always trying to get me to lock on to the winged disc, the Egyptian winged disc that greets you when you walk into the Washington Monument. And so I'm very fascinated by that. But especially we're curious about the relationship between the male phallic Washington Monument and the female womb-like dome of the U.S. Capitol. As Mark always says, when you put the male and female together, they're going to create a child. And that child is ultimately the enlightened American, we believe. We are all children of these ultimate symbols. And so, yeah, that really fascinates me. But again, in writing this book, we knew that Dan Brown might be looking at some stuff in D.C. That was the rumor anyway. And I just said to Mark, I said, I don't know any part of, you know, I'm not writing a Dan Brown guidebook. I'm not trying to chase Dan Brown around here. I want to write a book about the U.S. Capitol Dome. A lot of guys, there's 50 books about the esoteric layout of D.C., the sacred symbolism of D.C., the architecture. And you know what, George? If you're lucky, those books will give you one or two sentences about the dome of the U.S. Capitol and maybe a couple of words about the apotheosis. And I just wanted to focus on that, write the ultimate book about the dome of the Capitol, what's the artwork in the rotunda, with a special emphasis on, for the first time ever, the first time in 140 years, to decode fully the apotheosis of George Washington, this amazing painting, which is really, as the caller or the writer said, an American prophecy.
Matt from Rochester, New York, needs to know, are you part of the New World Order?
We all are, aren't we? I
mean, not me.
You know, well, let's
you know
define what's the New World Order. You know, am I part of the Bilderbergers and these other secret societies? No. In fact, you know, there's a conspiracy theory circulating on the internet right now, George, and that is that it was widely known. In fact, Glenn Kimball and I and Warren Gettler spoke with you a few years ago that there was no question that Dan Brown's follow-up book to The Da Vinci Code was going to involve Albert Pike and Scottish Rite Freemasonry. And so you had all these guidebooks to the Solomon's Key, as the book was titled, then coming out. And so people are saying, well, we know that that's what Dan Brown's book was supposed to be about, but all of a sudden he does this abrupt about-face. The book is delayed by 6 years, and all of a sudden he changes the subject matter. He's suddenly, out of the blue, talking about the apotheosis and ascension and transfiguration and all this stuff William Henry's talking about. He's the Illuminati hitman, is what they say, that he was called in to discredit me because if Dan Brown's writing about it, it can't possibly be true.
Larry.
So it's like, no, I'm not part of the New World Order. I'm being attacked by the New World Order, according to these conspiracy theories that are out there. It's a crazy world.
It is amazing. Larry in Minneapolis. What about the Dome of the Rock? Any significance in your research?
Well, if you go hop on over to the Coast to Coast website and go to my keys, I put four keys up there, including one that shows the diagram of the Dome of the Rock in Jerusalem, which is considered to be the site of the Holy of Holies of both Solomon Temple I from 800 BC and Solomon's Temple II, which existed at the time of Jesus and Mary Magdalene. This is considered a place of ascension, George. This is where Muhammad ascended into the heavens aboard Al-Barak, his magical horse. This is where Abraham was said to have nearly sacrificed Isaac. It's a very important place to Jews, Christians, and Muslims. And what happens is what we did is we took the diagram, the schematic of the Dome of the Rock, and the sacred rock in the center of it, laid it on top of the apotheosis, and you know what? It fit perfectly.
Perfectly. I sat in the Sistine Chapel, says Sue from Pengrove, California, listening to a singing group who was to sing for the Pope. The following Sunday, tears flowed out of everyone's eyes in our group. Incredible experience. I could have stayed in the Vatican studying the symbols for 10 years. Are the symbols in the Vatican even more immense than what we have in the Capitol?
I can't speak from personal experience, but from what I've seen, the Vatican may well be, next to the Great Pyramid, the ultimate code book anywhere on this planet. And I can't wait next year. The Shroud of Turin's going on display next year. And I'm planning right now a 2010 journey to Italy, hoping to take a group of folks with me who'd like to journey in this way, go to Rome for a few days, go down to Turin and see the Shroud of Turin, because I think that would be perhaps one of the ultimate journeys you can imagine taking.
Santiago from Madera, California. A lot of ignorance in today's American society. And do you believe Americans will wake up and be able to cope with the near future? That's a good question.
It's a phenomenal question, and it's one I wrestle with every day, because I look at the reality of what I see in the Founding Fathers and their thoughts, and you know something happened. Somehow the intention of this country was hijacked, probably around the War of 1812, and we are so far away from that, but I believe all things are circular. And I take comfort in the notion that we are, in fact, coming back around to a time very similar to what was going on during the American Revolution. And it may be a time. Remember, George, it was only a small percentage of the Americans at that time that fought the Revolutionary War. Everybody else went on about their business. So all we really need, and Dan Brown affirms this, is a small percentage of Americans to tap into this consciousness that we're talking about, and this will actually be a silent revolution. Things will change, and the rest of the people will just kind of go on about their business, but things will be different. Things will be better. That is the hope and promise of Freedom's Gate and also The Lost Symbol. Those two books together encapsulate not only the vision of the new America, the vision of the new United States Capitol, but also the how to make it happen.
Where, William, have you not been that you wish you could go to investigate?
Iraq.
You would have Iraq. A field day there, wouldn't you?
And by the way, George, I wonder, did you report on that book about Jacques Chirac, the president of France?
No, we haven't done a story on that.
This was a story that came out just about a month ago. I'll mention it briefly here. In this biography of Jacques Chirac, which he cooperated in, he says that in 2003, President George W. Bush, in the run-up to the Iraq War, told President Chirac of France that Iraq must be invaded to thwart Gog and Magog, the Bible's satanic agents of the apocalypse. And this is no joke. The President of the United States, in a top-secret phone call to a major European ally, asked French troops to join American soldiers in attacking in Iraq as a mission from God.
That's an amazing story.
And as you may recall, this is something we've discussed in detail, that we went into Iraq for reasons other than what was advertised. We went in there because we were on a mission to recover the ancient Stargate technology of Babylon. And so here is President Chirac now, 6 years later, coming out and giving us some backstory on what was going on, what George W. Bush was saying on the phone privately to these world leaders. Chirac is like, what are you talking about? So he put some religious scholars on it, and they came back to him and told him that, you know, what Bush is referring to is what the book of Ezekiel or the Old Testament, the book of Ezekiel, chapters 38 and 39, referred to, in which God rages against Gog and Magog. And Chirac came back and said, no, thank you.
That's a great story. Great story indeed. You ready for some phone calls?
Yes, absolutely. Been looking forward
okay.
to it.
We will do that next when William Henry continues on Coast to Coast AM, his website, williamhenry.net. We'll be back.